The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this November 18th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area as lots to get to on today's show. College football, college basketball, even some college volleyball. Yes, we got a lot of Auburn things to talk about today, plus some of the general storylines going on around the country as well, as we are in full-on crossover season in college and high school and all over the place. And so we appreciate you being with us on this Tuesday afternoon. And happy Tuesday to you, Christian. Hope everything's going well for you.
Yeah, happy Tuesday, man. We got flipping to the hardwood now. No more Lee Scott football, so the Lee Scott Sports Network has taken it to the hoops side of things. Lee Scott Academy and Childersburg. Not the first game, their second game for both the varsity girls and the varsity boys, but our first broadcast on the Lee Scott Sports Network. So trying to flip my brain into basketball mode over the weekend. Hopefully I can remember all of the whistles and the calls and everything, and hopefully I can remember what a three-pointer and a nice little layup look like as well. And we'll get our first chance. Lee Scott again and Childersburg. Girls are set for a 5:30 tip. Boys are set for 7 over on Tiger Country 104.5. Should be a whole lot of fun here this evening, but a whole lot of fun on the show for you once again here this afternoon. We're talking results in college football from this past weekend. Whatever we think is happening in the SEC and what the playoff could look like because of all of the SEC teams that feel like they still want to have a seat at the table. Speaking of college football playoff rankings, those come out tonight. Volume 3 of the CFP rankings. What changes will we see? What do we want to see? What do we think it will look like in the end? And then a little bit of a quarterback discussion as well, as we now know that Ashton Daniels is going to be redshirted. Could play in one of the next two games, and obviously choosing to play him in the Iron Bowl rather than against Mercer, who we continue to hear more and more about, especially on the offensive side of the football. That Mercer Bears team knows how to find the end zone, but a nice conversation on who we want to see and then possibly some questions that could arise from that in the future. All of that coming up here in hour number one.
Yep, so we do have a guest coming up in the second hour of today's show, but until then, phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the program, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number. If you want to call in and be a part of the show today, 334-321-1390. If you have college football playoff predictions or some projections on who you think is in, who is out, what maybe needs to happen down the stretch, you can give us your thoughts on that. If you want to talk the Auburn football quarterback situation, we could talk about that. Who do you want to see start this weekend against Mercer? Should there be a rotation? Should it be one guy throughout start to finish? And then, of course, the coaching search, too. That's still going on. That's still a thing for Auburn football. We'll talk some Auburn basketball as well. So, again, you can be a part of the show on the phone lines, 334-321-1390 to call us or shoot us a text at 334-784-1067. And we touched on some of this yesterday, but felt like we didn't give it enough time, so wanted to circle back to it this afternoon with big results from college football this past weekend, because the playoff rankings come out again tonight, and unlike the first two rankings, we expect some movement tonight. We expect some things to happen because of the result in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, where Oklahoma goes on the road and beats Alabama 23-21, where Ty Simpson for the Crimson Tide had to throw the football 42 times. They scored just 3 touchdowns, and Oklahoma escapes with the upset victory. This causes some chaos now, not just in the SEC, but of course in the college football playoff, and I think easily, Christian, this was the biggest result of the weekend. We talked yesterday about A&M's comeback win against South Carolina and whether Shane Beamer should be fired or not. We mentioned Georgia's beatdown of Texas and a top 10 matchup that probably shouldn't have been. We talked about Ole Miss, who escaped Florida, and there's a lot more drama going on in Oxford than a 10-point win over the Gators. We talked about Notre Dame and their fake top 25 win over Pittsburgh that I don't think is legit. But we did not get to Alabama and Oklahoma. And I pose the question to start today's show, does that result, 23-21, Oklahoma taking down Alabama in Tuscaloosa, ending the nation's longest home winning streak of 17 in a row there at Bryant-Denny, does that result say more about how good Oklahoma is, or maybe that Alabama's not as good as we thought they were?
I think it's another one of those tales of two things can be true at the same time. Oklahoma obviously walked in knowing that they needed to win this game to further any sort of conversation that they wanted to have in the college football playoff, and by no means did Alabama see this game as, oh, we can give this one up and still be okay, but things look a little bit different when you're 6-1 in the SEC and you have those two losses, but only one of those losses in the SEC. Man, when you look at this game, and we talk a lot about the box score viewers, the box score watchers. I need to claim that and get royalty from it for anybody that uses it. But, man, this is the opposite of a box viewer game, just because of how different everything went. Man, you look at the first downs, Alabama 23, Oklahoma 12. Third down efficiency, Alabama 5 of 13, also 2 of 3 on third down. Oklahoma 3 of 13. Total yards, 406 to 212 in favor of the Crimson Tide. And you sit there and go, okay, where's the one big factor? You look over at the turnover margin, and how many times do we tell you that if the yardage doesn't look right, it's because of turnovers, and you had two fumbles and an interception, you still dominated the time of possession by almost 10 minutes, but man, you give Oklahoma and John Mateer a short field so many times, and you have some of the best special teams units in college football with Tate Sandell, the lefty that feels like he could kick it from 80 yards and it would be good. And he kicks 3 field goals and gets the job done. And yeah, you mentioned Oklahoma walks away with a 23-21 victory. This was part one of the doomsday scenario for the SEC, because we mentioned if Oklahoma beats Alabama and Texas beats Georgia, my goodness, what could the overall SEC look like? Obviously, part two did not come true in Athens. We'll get to Kirby Smart here momentarily. I feel like we got to talk a little bit more about that game as well. But yeah, now you have another 8-2 team, a 4-2 team in the SEC that has a really nice win on the road added to their resume. Who says that Oklahoma now doesn't have a legit conversation? Maybe not to be one of the top SEC teams picked, but almost once you pick your 2 or 3 locked-in spots for the SEC and the Big Ten, you almost look at Oklahoma as the rest of the field type of team, and they easily should have a conversation. Now they get to go on the road, or they get to go back home, rather, and prove it against another Missouri team that's struggling, but still has one of the best running backs, if not the best running back in the country, in Ahmad Hardy, who had 25 carries for 300 yards last week, which is absolutely ridiculous. But Oklahoma now controls their own destiny, in my opinion, just because of that big-time win that they were able to get on the road.
And if you're 10-2, right, what did we say coming into the season? Any 10-2 SEC team should make it to the college football playoff. And that's what Oklahoma has the chance to be. Not only would they be 10-2, they would have then four top 25 wins on their resume. That's strong, man. That's really strong. I know their loss to Texas didn't look good at the time, but think about what Texas has done. Since that game, Texas went from unranked to then a top 10 team in the country, which that's not natural. That's not supposed to happen. It's almost like they did it on purpose for a specific reason, right? And you saw that they are not a top 10 team. They're good, but they're not great. And I think top 10 teams are considered great in college football. If Oklahoma wins out both games at home against Missouri and LSU, they deserve to be in the college football playoff. Plain and simple. That's how it should be. And somebody in our on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067 says that Alabama, quote, Auburned that game away, and they absolutely loved it. Which is kind of true, that Alabama, it's like, man.
Hurts that that's the comparison, or
you
that's
had
the
chance,
that's the example.
Right,
but
you had your chances, you had your opportunities, and you found a way to not win.
Yeah. You were close.
You were close, though. You were close. Yeah. I would know something about that.
But no, you sit there and you look at, I mean, Oklahoma's schedule. You beat Michigan in week two, which many thought at the time was a good win. Then you kind of hit the middle of the season and it looked like an okay win. And now all of a sudden it's starting to look like a pretty good win again with Bryce Underwood continuing to figure things out, the freshman quarterback for Michigan. Oklahoma also has a win on the road at Tennessee, which you felt like the entire country, including us, both picked Tennessee to comfortably win that game. And then you get a bye week and a win over Alabama on the road. You now have Missouri and LSU both at home. You feel like you're going to be heavily favored. I think I saw the opening line for Missouri. Oklahoma was right around 10 points in favor of the Sooners. And I would imagine just based off of how the season is gone, it would be right around that mark for LSU as well. And so if you can handle business, especially with the arguments that you continue to see teams either have or at work against them of playing your best football at the end of the season, I think there's a legitimate opportunity.
And remember, right, if we're talking about 10-2 SEC teams deserving to be in the college football playoff, you know who else would fall into that category if they win their final two games against Kentucky and on the road at Tennessee? It would be the Vanderbilt Commodores, with their only two losses being in Tuscaloosa and in Austin against two top 25 teams, but still holding wins over top 25 ranked teams of South Carolina, LSU, and Missouri. And if the rankings stay, it would be another one over Tennessee. Now, you can argue, right, with a wall if you think South Carolina's a top 25 team or LSU's a top 25 team. They're clearly not anymore, but that's where early rankings come into an advantage for a team like Vanderbilt, but they would be 10-2. Oklahoma would be 10-2, right? And the reason I bring that up is I think we are finally starting to see some separation in the SEC, where we learned and have learned that Texas is not a playoff contender anymore, Tennessee is not a playoff contender anymore, and Missouri is not a playoff contender anymore. The teams out of the Southeastern Conference that are fighting for playoff spots are A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Alabama, and Vanderbilt. And I say fighting, teams that are looking to make it to the playoff and still are in contention to do so.
Oklahoma as well.
I thought I said them. Sorry.
I believe there's six total. So A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Alabama, those four, Oklahoma, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, so there's six. There's six SEC teams looking to fill 12 spots in the college football playoff, but we know that that's not how that works, because the Big Ten will get three of them in, with Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon. Those three are confirmed.
And,
like,
the playoff committee does not want USC to beat Oregon this weekend, because then USC is on the verge of 10-2.
Yeah, I think USC is the final Big Ten team that has a say there. No, that's not true. Michigan could do it. I saw something that says mathematically there's a way Michigan could still make the Big Ten championship game. That if they were to win out, including beat Ohio State, Michigan would have to beat Maryland this weekend and then beat Ohio State But somehow, I think there's a weird mathematical way for them to still go to the Big Ten championship.
I think
game.
Ohio State would have to lose to Rutgers and Michigan, though.
It's possible, yeah.
Possible is a word.
It's possible, yeah. But if Michigan is 10-2 with a win over Ohio State, their only losses at that point of the season would be at Oklahoma, again, a borderline college football playoff team, and then on the road at USC, who is fighting to be a college football playoff team. That's the team you just brought up, who is also 8-2 with games against Oregon and UCLA.
With their only losses would be in Champaign and in South Bend at Notre Dame.
Because Oregon's 9-1 right now. So if they lose this weekend, they're 8-2. Then they go on the road to Seattle to take on Washington in what would most likely be an elimination game for the Ducks. Washington's out. They don't have anything to do with it. But they could play spoiler.
Based off of the Big Ten and the SEC, there are 11 teams that still legitimately have a shot to make the college football playoff. In those two conferences alone, you could almost fill the 12-team playoff.
Which doesn't count, obviously. Texas Tech from the Big 12, Notre Dame, who is embarrassing themselves
arguably
by being
BYU
in there.
BYU as well.
And BYU.
In the Big 12. And then
Utah in the Big 12. They're 8-2. Unfortunately, this is where the same records from different records are not created equal, right? 10-2 in the Big 12 is not the same as 10-2 in the SEC.
Yeah, like a Houston, if they found a way to go 10-2, they would be one of the teams that would pitch the argument, but when you're
their resume is bad.
When you have to take Oregon State to overtime, you keep it close with Houston and Arizona State and West Virginia beat you at home. Like, that's where those losses don't look good. But just based off of, gosh, that should be the math that we do. So between the two Big Ten and SEC, there's 11. Right now in the Big 12, you have Texas Tech, BYU, Utah, and Houston that have a legitimate chance. So that is 15. You go to the ACC, Georgia Tech and Virginia and Miami, I would say. Those three.
Yeah.
There's 18. You then work your way into, where's the last one I'm trying to find? I guess those are the Big Four. You then have Notre Dame. And then you have
the G5.
The G5 teams.
The guaranteed G5 spot. Yeah. A guaranteed G5 spot. So which right now would be North Texas.
Yeah, North Texas.
Or James Madison.
James Madison, Navy, Tulane, Memphis. Some of those aren't as legitimate, but you throw those five teams in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's 24 teams on November 18th that still feel like they deserve a shot as of right now to compete in the college football playoff. And wild to think that there's a couple teams in the SEC that could finish 9-3 that still feel like they deserve to have a chance.
And I think on a year like this year, again, 9-3, we were just talking about 9-2 or 10-2 in the SEC. 10-2 is playoff good enough for me. 9-3 is borderline, right? And you can make the argument that 9-3 in the SEC compared to 11-1, 10-2 in other conferences is still better, is still greater, right? But this is the season, because of where things stand right now, because that many teams are still in the hunt, this could be the year that that 9-3 SEC team doesn't get in because other teams won more games. Even if their resume is weaker, they still won more games, which still has to be rewarded, in my opinion. Even if you play in a weaker conference, even if it's the ACC, as much as I would hate to see a 10-2 Miami in there or a 10-2 Virginia, right? The ACC sucks. That conference is terrible, okay? There are G5 conferences that would do better and compete with them right now. But you have to reward a team for winning their most of their games, as much as I hate to say it sometimes.
Unless your opinion on Alabama.
Yeah, Alabama.
Or if Alabama
the,
loses in the Iron Bowl and goes 9-3, you say ain't no way.
Ain't no
they
way.
Keep them out.
Ain't no way. I firmly believe that. And we'll talk about that more as we get into Iron Bowl week, because Auburn has now just accepted this role of spoiler, and Auburn thinks that if they win the Iron Bowl, yeah, and that if they win the Iron Bowl, that Alabama's eliminated. And I think that's funny. I think it's funny that people believe they would leave Alabama out of the college football playoff. That's one man's opinion, though.
They'd find a way to put the G5 team as the 5 seed and Alabama as the 12, and Alabama would go to Memphis to play in the first round.
And have more fans there. Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, got an interesting question as we get to break, because we are talking more about the college football playoff with the new rankings coming out tonight. Got a question at 334-784-1067. That's our on-the-line text box. And it says, as of today, give us your prediction of the 12 teams if things play out pretty chalk. All right, if things go chalk,
okay.
Which obviously they won't go fully chalk because of how college football goes, but if it goes pretty chalk, maybe an upset or two in there,
sure.
We'll tell what we think could happen for the college football playoff. We'll talk about that when we come back, because we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Talking college football in the playoff with more rankings coming out tonight based off of the results we had this past weekend in college football. But we're down to just 2 weeks left in the regular season, which is crazy to think about. But we were asked in our On the Line text box before going to break at 334-784-1067. As of right now, Christian, what our playoff predictions are if everything goes relatively chalk. And
for those out of that world, if favorites went out.
Yes, if everything happens the way that it's supposed to, who makes it to the college football playoff? And I do want to put an asterisk next to this before we dive in, because I'm still not sure how conference championship games are going to be judged this year.
Yeah.
We don't know that answer. And the reason I bring that up is Ohio State, Indiana, the nation's two best teams, are set to play each other in the Big Ten championship game. Okay. Texas A&M and is it Georgia still projected, or is it Ole Miss projected to make it to the SEC championship game? I think they're still juried out on that, right?
Well, since Georgia has the head-to-head.
Well, then Georgia would be in.
What
that's
a wild I haven't even – yeah.
Yeah. So think about that.
Oh, yeah. Never
right?
Mind. Yeah, they're
– so it would be Texas A&M, the third-ranked team in the country, versus Georgia, the fourth-ranked team in the country. So just those alone, our situation could present itself twice.
Twice, yeah.
On does Texas A&M and Georgia – and then Ohio State, Indiana, do those teams get punished if they lose?
Yeah, or again, I mean, you're sitting there looking at it, and I have my 12 that I wrote out here that I'll read momentarily, but it goes back to exactly what you're talking about of Texas A&M and Georgia. We'll throw them because I don't think Indiana or Ohio State would move regardless if, or might be maybe 1 and 2, but not from the standpoint of moving out of that first round bye.
Even if they lose,
I don't think
you think
so.
Those two. If they go undefeated,
correct?
Yeah.
If Ohio State loses to Michigan and all of a sudden Indiana beats Ohio State, then they could drop from 1 to 6 or whatever, or from 3 to 6 or whatever the case may be. But if Texas A&M and Georgia play each other as the 3 and 4, what is the benefit for A&M winning that football game?
Yeah.
What is the benefit for the Aggies going to Atlanta to a basically a road game for Georgia, or for A&M because of Georgia, risking your undefeated season and risking a guaranteed spot of getting a first round bye? Because you know, although A&M's not allowed to be punished, and the argument will be, well, look, they're still in the college football playoff, you know dang well that they would move A&M to 5 or 6, mm-hmm. and Texas Tech, if they win their championship, would slide right in, even though that would be Texas A&M's first loss.
Or look at Ole Miss, who's on the outside looking in. If they went out, okay, again, Ole Miss being 10-1, they have one game remaining, and it's the Egg Bowl. They would pull in Alabama and be on the outside of the SEC championship game looking in. And
they'd be in the best spot.
And whoever loses, here comes Ole Miss. They just slide right on it. So I say all that. I know we haven't answered the question yet, but – that's the problem, is I don't know how to answer because I don't know what the committee's going to do with championship games. I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't trust them is my issue.
If it goes all to chalk, this is the 12-team format that I have. I have Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, and Georgia. And obviously this is, I guess, prior to conference championship week. But I then have Texas Tech at 5, Ole Miss at 6, Oregon is 7, Notre Dame as my 8th-ranked team, Alabama as my 9th, BYU as my 10th. And here's where things get interesting. I have the ACC champion as my 11th because as of now, I don't think the ACC is good enough to get two teams in. I think it will be the winner of Miami and Georgia Tech, in my opinion. Though that will be... that will be the one conference championship game that is a true play-in, automatic bid, almost mid-major March Madness type of game where, oh, you win, congratulations, you're automatically in. And then I have the G5 team as my 12th team.
Yeah.
So Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, and Georgia, what we expect to be the top four teams with the playoff rankings that come out tonight. To get the first round bye, you would then have first round games in Lubbock and Oxford. Gross. In Eugene and in South Bend. What was the rule with Notre Dame? Was it saying that they could never be lower than 8th if they went out, or they could never be?
Is that right? I think it's me. Yeah, it was mine.
ESPN ads, man.
Yeah.
But there's some sort of rule along that side of things, but. Again, it would be Lubbock, Oxford, Eugene, and South Bend. The G5 team would go to Texas Tech. The ACC champion would go to Ole Miss. BYU would go to Oregon, and Alabama would go to Notre Dame. That would be,
yeah,
if everything
about right.
goes about as chalk as it could, not counting anything crazy in the championship games where teams get punished that shouldn't be punished because they said they wouldn't be punished.
Yeah.
That would be the way that I see it playing out.
Yeah. Our buddy Jack Hutton's texting us and says, go to 16 teams. Says, we do auto qualifiers in every other sport, which is true. Do it for the P4s plus 2 G5 spots, then 10 at-large bids. First round at home for the top 8 teams. That would eliminate buys altogether. The top 8 teams would just host the first round of the playoffs. The committee should then get the 16 they think should be in and rank them 1 through 16. You just have 16 total teams. You rank them 1 through 16. The top 8 teams host, and you just play it as a tournament. You play it as a bracket, and you eliminate all of that. To the point where would that fix the conference championship game argument to where if you qualify for it, I still feel the situation would come up where it's like, well, the committee says it, take A&M, right? Well, I'm the 3rd-ranked team in the country. And we qualified for the SEC championship game. If we win, we don't really get anything. Maybe an easier path, hypothetically, by moving up 1 or 2, maybe. But if we lose, then we could fall down and get a harder game. We could fall out of a hosting scenario.
Ole Miss is that example right now. If they're the 7th-ranked team in the country, if they lose, they go from 7 to 9, and all of a sudden, rather than hosting, you're going on the road.
In this 16-team scenario.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously it would change with the numbers, but
yeah,
the team that's 8th right now is, say that's Ole Miss, and they qualify for the SEC championship game. But if you lose... now, all of a sudden, rather than not playing the game, oh, congratulations, rather than hosting whoever, you now get to go to South Bend. You now get to go to Eugene because of a extra game that you get punished for playing while these other teams, while that 9th team that slides into your spot is on the couch watching you play.
And just, I go back to just how rigged this thing is for Notre Dame, too, who has gotten their way, has crossed their legs, has pounded their fist and screamed and cried and pouted to make sure that they get what they want to where they don't have to join a conference, because A&M will make the college football playoff every single year. A, because of their logo, but B, because they don't have this problem. This whole situation we're presenting, Notre Dame will never fall into this problem because they don't play in a conference, so they don't have to play a conference championship game. They're not a P4 team. They're technically with a conference affiliation. They're not a G5 team. They're just a free ride-in, which is not fair. That's not how this should work.
That explains perfectly why the system is broken, and the statement that Notre Dame released prior to the season of, with all of the new conference alignments, this is further implementing why we remain independent, just so that way, yeah, they never have to deal with any sort of drama like this. Wouldn't every team like to avoid any sort of drama and just be presented with a playoff spot every year if you go 9-3 or 10-2 and don't have to worry about playing that extra game?
Yeah.
I'd love to be Marcus Freeman sitting at home watching one of my teams that I'm scheduled to play in just a couple of weeks have to go fight for a championship bid. Oh, no, that star running back got hurt.
Darn.
Ah, Jeremiah Love,
you feel good?
You're sitting next to me. You're still good, right?
Yeah, sweet. Enjoying the bye week?
Yeah, I mean,
it's stupid, man. But it'll never change. It'll never change. And so I think your playoff is pretty close, is pretty accurate if everything goes chalk. But the fun part about college football as we get to break is it won't go chalk. Something will happen. Somebody will lose a game that they're not supposed to, whether it's here down the stretch of the regular season or losing in a conference championship game and the committee walks back what they've said and they punish the team for it, and that will be the end of championship games altogether.
You could just do that crazy SEC championship day that Christian's talked about.
That's true. You could.
Especially if that was a 16-team field. The top two teams get the automatic bids. The other two winners become the easy at-large bids. And then the other ones become the field.
Yeah, I think it's possible. But it's too good of an idea. They won't do it. Okay, let's take a break. We blew past it, but we kind of moved some things around to make sure we wrapped up that conversation. We will take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll flip over to Auburn and talk about what could happen this weekend as the Tigers take on Mercer, and further discussions on who the quarterback is going to be. Because we're starting to see a split in the fan base of, should it be Deuce or should it be Jackson? And should there be separation or splitting of time at all? We talk about that coming up next here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
Just about 30 or 40 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us. And phone lines are open if you want to be a part of today's show. You can certainly do so at 334-321-1390. Or the text box is open as well at 334-784-1067. And we flip gears over to Auburn University football, where we know the Tigers are coming off a bye week, right? They come back and take on Mercer this Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. And DJ Durkin, interim head coach for the Tigers, spoke to the media yesterday and answered kind of the question that everybody has been debating throughout the bye week was, who's going to play at quarterback? And Christian, we didn't learn who was going to be playing. We just learned who wasn't going to be playing. And seems like everybody is in a consensus agreement that DJ Durkin and the staff did the right thing. They said that Ashton Daniels will not play against Mercer, giving him the opportunity to preserve his red shirt for another year, whether that's at Auburn, whether that's somewhere else, we don't know, but we'll come to find that out at a later date. But now it opens up the question, which he refused to give a true answer to, of who starts against Mercer? Is it Ashton, or is it Deuce Knight? Or is it Jackson Arnold? Do you have a strong opinion one way or the other on Tuesday afternoon on who you think should start? And then there's a second part to that question that I want to get to in a minute.
Sure. The first part of the question, no. My biggest thing was making sure what needed to be taken care of was. That was kind of my viewpoint when we brought this up. Was it, what, last Wednesday or Thursday on whether Ashton was going to be redshirted? As long as that was taken care of, you figured both quarterbacks would play. It almost becomes the starting point guard or the starting shooting guard versus the guy that's the sixth man that still plays the starter minutes. Obviously, you, for whoever the starting quarterback is, would get the crowd pop, whether that be Deuce or Jackson, good or negative, for, you know, the starting lineups. But both are going to see the field in the way that Durkin has phrased it is, or, you know, you're looking at it all week long to see who's going to take the better reps, who's going to basically take that next step to, I guess, lead a majority of the drives. And that being said, if it's one of the quarterbacks that leads two touchdown drives, it's going to be hard to easily just go to the next one. But as of right now, I do not have my bank nor my feelings on one side or the other.
See, I think it should be Deuce Knight.
You think so?
I think you should start Deuce because...
Is this... Sorry. I don't know the best way to phrase this, but is this with almost the expectation that Jackson Arnold is not going to be here next year? Is that why Deuce Knight is your answer or could be an answer for some people?
I think that's part of the reason... Yes.
And obviously that sounds
that's a bad mentality.
Harsh.
Yes, correct. It is. That's not a healthy way to think, and I don't think a coach would ever vocalize that.
Right.
Right. But yes, I do think there's a little bit of that in my mind, but I more so am saying I start Deuce Knight just to see what you have. Right? I mean, the only action we've seen of Deuce was when he came in at the very end of the Ball State game.
Yeah, and was,
right?
What, 2 for 5 for 14 yards,
yeah,
and had a,
yeah,
had a couple good runs?
Yeah, I think he had like 16 rushing yards, yeah, or something. Like, that's all we've seen, right? And you just don't know what you have. And the last thing I want to do, or I guess the last thing I want to see Auburn do, is the same thing you just vocalized about Jackson Arnold is my fear with Deuce Knight. I don't want this to be a forever what if of Deuce Knight at Auburn. Now, do I think that one game against Mercer is the end-all be-all that says, yep, he's the dude, that's the guy, he's the future? No, I'm not saying to go fully extreme, but I think it is now time to give him a shot because I'm going to say something, and I have something to kind of go against it, so just bear with me here for a moment. You've started Jackson Arnold in the majority of the games this year, and you have not won most of those games. And so with that, I think it is time, and I think it is fair to start Deuce Knight in this game and against a good Mercer team, but they are FCS, right? And you should have the talent advantage at every single position in the two deep and even in the third strings as well, okay? I think it is the right thing to do to allow Deuce Knight to get his first college start, put him out there, see what he can do, and then you have the veteran and Jackson Arnold on the bench to bring in if it just doesn't go well. You play two quarters, you're like, ooh, okay, this is he's clearly not ready. Because I do think there's an argument, Christian, that there's a reason Deuce Knight has not played up to this point. Now, the flip side to all of that, that I fully hear and understand, is, well, are we really going to trust the opinions of the offensive staff, or AKA Hugh Freeze, on what his judgment call was and quarterback option was?
On why he went with Jackson?
Yes, the guy that's no longer employed here. And that argument also applies to Jackson Arnold, who has every right to stand up and say, don't I deserve a shot without that guy calling plays for me? Don't I deserve a shot in this new look offense that we saw against Vanderbilt? I hear that side of the argument too. I do. I just think starting Deuce Knight at least gives you an idea of what you've got with the young guy.
And it makes it to where, again, by no means is it hoping, like what you say, where if Deuce goes 18 of 25 for 250 and three touchdowns, that now that is your entire future. But it at least gives you film. It gives you legitimate film to look at, to where next year, based off of how everything goes, and you hope that that's not a legitimate conversation, but obviously every conversation is legitimate now when next year becomes a reality, of making sure that you have now more than just Ashton Daniels that has had legitimate reps. Mm-hmm. And again, obviously there's a fear that both of those guys, if not all three guys, could look completely different once again next year, because the quarterback situation, I mean, what, how wild could that look next year if Ashton, Deuce, Jackson, if you have Falzone, who's now not quite crystal ball, but I know has had legitimate conversations with Syracuse and some other schools because of where he was committed before, was committed to Penn State, and we know how kind of fast the Auburn flip was, kind of came out of nowhere. And so what could that possibly look like? Is the next head coach going to bring in one, if not two, quarterbacks that are on his team right now? What could that look like? And so obviously you can't take Mercer and Alabama as the fail-safe for next year, but adds to the reasons of why Durkin right now is the interim. You feel almost bad for him because of the amount of decisions that shouldn't have to be made by a defensive coordinator are now being made in week, 12 of the football's year?
And at least it's against Mercer, right? At least it's your last non-conference game of the season. But I agree. I think there's a lot more weight on these decisions than you feel that is necessary or fair to him. But that's also just what you sign up for, and it is what it is, right? But there's another question and another part of this that I want to propose and answer on the other side is, I've started to see a lot of Auburn fans in this debate of who should start this weekend. Is it Deuce Knight or Jackson Arnold? The other part of this conversation is, should there be any sort of splitting reps, splitting time? Or is it who starts, they finish? We'll talk about that as we wrap up the first hour of today's show. You can be a part of it, 334-321-1390. We answer that question on the other side.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes here in the first 60 minutes of today's show, but don't worry, we got a whole other hour coming up for you where we will talk some more Auburn athletics, also talk some college basketball. Got some big updates from Stephen Pearl today on Auburn basketball with Keyshawn Hall, who is out indefinitely is what it sounds like. So we'll get you some updates there, and then a fun interview coming up in the second hour of today's show. But Christian, I propose the question that I've seen Auburn fans debating right now, which is, yes, who should play quarterback this weekend? Who should start this weekend for Auburn against Mercer? Is it Deuce Knight or Jackson Arnold, since Ashton Daniels is not going to play? But I've also seen Auburn fans have the discussion of, should there be split reps, right? Should one guy play the first half, the one guy play the second half? Should it be by drive? Should it be by quarter? Should it be based off of performance? Like, I've seen a lot of people have that talk, and I'm curious on where you stand, since you're not strongly opinionated one way or the other on who should start. Are you strongly opinionated on if they both play or not?
Honestly, I feel a little bit stronger about that than I do not naming a starter, because this is exactly what I talked about, the exact scenario that I mentioned when we weren't sure that Ashton was going to get the start, I believe, at Arkansas, Kentucky, rather, because Ashton started that second half. But it was the Kentucky game of, if Jackson's going to start, it's not fair for him to have the feeling of, I cannot make a mistake. I have to play perfect. I cannot throw an incomplete pass or have a miscommunication with the receiver, or for all you know, if I have two first downs and then we stall at midfield like Auburn loves to do, and it's basically a five and out and you punt at midfield, does that mean I'm looking over my shoulder and is Deuce grabbing his helmet? I feel like that is the incorrect way of going about it. I think that it will be very much a set schedule between the two of them, and that's then the coach's decision on, does that get altered if Jackson leads two touchdown drives, as I mentioned, halfway through the second quarter, and it was supposed to be Deuce that got the two-minute drill and then the first drive out of the second half. But if Jackson looked good, does it stick with that, or does it flip? Or if it's going to be, regardless of what drives look like, both are going to play, this is what it's going to look like, at least maybe in the first half. And then in halftime, you go in and make the adjustments, and that's when you make your decision. But I think that I think it's the incorrect mindset for it to be, I'm going to see how it looks on the field after a drive or two, and then base my decision off of that.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same spot. And I said earlier that I think Deuce Knight should start. That would be my pick. And I also talked about having Jackson Arnold as your backup, obviously, if things go awry and you get into the game and it's like, oh, okay, this is not going well.
Are you almost at the point of Deuce starts, Jackson is ready at halftime if needed, but if Deuce looks good, then it's Deuce's game?
Correct. Even if it doesn't look great, Deuce is the guy. It would have to be bad for me to go to Jackson
Arnold. If it's
Arnold.
A 14-3 Mercer lead at halftime,
yes,
then that's when it's, okay, abandon ship, plan B.
Yes, but my pick would be start Deuce, play Deuce until you can't anymore. Make it his game, his team, and don't give him the idea that he could get pulled. And I think he's going to perform just fine, and I think he delivers you a win. But we'll see. That's a debate going on between the Auburn fans and the coaches and everybody else on who starts and plays at quarterback this weekend. More on that as the week goes along. But when we come back to start hour two, we talk college basketball because it's been an awesome season with big results around the SEC and the country. We start hour number two talking that next.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. If you missed any of the first hour, we talked a lot of college football. Talked about big results from this past weekend. Talked about the college football playoff and how, you know, it's just a broken system. Nothing new on today's show. Just updates on what those things are. And also talked about Auburn in terms of who we'll start at quarterback this weekend for Auburn. And who it should be, why it should be that person, and how much the other person should play if things go wrong, or even if they don't go wrong. So all of that was in hour number one. Again, a lot of college football talk, a lot of Auburn football talk. All of that was in the first 60 minutes of today's show. If you missed it, you could go and check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, flipping a little bit more over to the hardwood once again, talking a little bit more scores from last week in college basketball and some more intriguing games coming up here this weekend. And we'll spend a little bit of time looking at what next week is going to look like as well, or I guess 2 weeks from a week and a half or so from now, right? Or is it next week? It is next week. Players era.
Yeah, it's next week, brother.
Next week. Yeah. Sorry, I had my days all mixed up. Couldn't remember if it was...
Yeah, whenever. Starts a week from yesterday.
So, we will talk about that here in hour number two. About the...
You hurt my brain.
The games on Monday, the games on Tuesday, what the third place and the championship games are going to look like. This the wild schedule that shows you that the start of holiday hoopsgiving season is here. Also, as Jacob mentioned, some health updates on Auburn basketball with Keyshawn Hall and some others, and then some notes that Stephen Pearl had from the press conference, as well as Auburn prepares for Jackson State coming up here on Wednesday night inside Neville Arena. And then we get to sit down with Auburn head coach of the volleyball squad, Brent Crouch, as Auburn has already made the trip to the SEC volleyball tournament, and everything previewing what that tournament is going to look like should be a whole lot of fun. We have our Weagle guys that are making their way down. Bless you, man. I heard that from my microphone.
Ow.
Yeah, that sounded like it hurt.
Yeah. It's more of a sneeze cough type thing that
sure.
I got. Yeah.
I mean, that one came from the belly button rather than
pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, we have our a couple of our Weagle guys that are making the trip to go call Auburn Women's Volleyball on Weagle 91.1 FM. So shout out to those guys, and shout out to Brent Crouch and Auburn Volleyball as well. All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yep, so a lot to get to. Until that interview, phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the show, you absolutely can. We'd love to hear from you as we talk college basketball. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Here to get us started in hour number two if you want to be a part of the show on the phone lines. Or you can send us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And it's hard to believe that we are 3, 4, 5 games in already to the college basketball season. And man, you look around some of the big results we've already had, some big games coming up tonight and tomorrow before next week, as you mentioned, the Players Era Tournament out in Las Vegas. I mean, you've got the thing that they're doing in New York tonight. There's two games at the Garden tonight with Kentucky and Michigan State, and Kansas and Duke. That's it, the Champions Classic, yep. And then Kansas and Duke tonight, which star freshman for Kansas not playing tonight, which is unfortunate. But four major logos and programs in college basketball.
Yeah, the State Farm Champions Classic.
And then Alabama plays Illinois tomorrow, so don't forget about that one. So big games, but some have already taken place. And man, you just start looking around, and there's some really good teams in college basketball, man. I mean, yes, you've got the big names of Purdue, Houston, of course. Houston lost their number one ranking, by the way, in the AP poll. Purdue jumped them in the latest AP poll because of the close game against Auburn on Sunday. UConn's up there, Arizona, Duke, Louisville, Michigan, Illinois, Florida still up there, even though the Gators did take a loss. They bounced back and smacked Miami on Sunday night. Kentucky, saw a quote from Mark Pope, I think yesterday, that said he wishes he was further along with the roster that he has, which is really stacked and very talented, but says he wishes they were further along at this point in the season. So
when you bring in 18 new guys
and pay 20-something million dollars, yeah, I would imagine demanding
that they're probably not, as a team, chemistry-wise, where you want them to be quite.
Yeah, I would probably demand near perfection, too, if I'm paying that much money, because they lost to Louisville a couple of days ago. Again, they've got Michigan State coming up tonight. They still have North Carolina, Gonzaga, Indiana, and St. John's. in their non-conference schedule do the Cats. So that's pretty good. I mean, that was 12th-ranked Louisville. It's 17th-ranked Michigan State, 18th-ranked North Carolina, 13th-ranked Gonzaga, unranked Indiana, who will probably be by the time they get there with the way the Hoosiers are playing, 14th St. John's, and then Kentucky opens up SEC play. Do you remember who the Cats open up with and where they open up to start SEC play?
They start in Tuscaloosa, don't they?
They start on the road in the airplane hangar at Alabama. So the Cats, yes, may have a couple of losses on their resume, but man, the SEC, it's stacked once again. Here are the teams currently ranked in the top 25 of the AP poll, just out of the SEC alone. Okay. Now, the top 10 doesn't have you in it, other than Florida. Florida's at 10, Alabama's 11, Kentucky is 12, Tennessee's at 20, Arkansas 21, Auburn at 22. You have six teams ranked in the top 25 as of right now from the Southeastern Conference. Vanderbilt received votes to get in. Missouri received votes to get in. Mississippi State, Georgia, all received votes to get in to the top 25. And so this conference is deep again. It's still just looking for which one's going to be the best. It's early in the season, and I get that. But you are still trying to figure out, okay, which team is the best in the SEC? Because all of those teams that I just named, other than Tennessee, they all have a loss already.
Yeah.
Tennessee's the only one ranked in the top 25 of the SEC that's undefeated so far.
It makes it to where, as a fan of just college basketball and as a fan of your individual team in the SEC, goes to show you that a loss isn't going to kill you in SEC play, but it also goes to show you that every single day, every single game is going to be a 40-minute, if not 45, 50-minute war, just because we talked about it last year about how there seemed to be a little bit of a tier list that could be made with the SEC teams. You had the top couple, tier 1A. You had tier 1B that was kind of just that half step below. And then you had a little bit of a drop off to where those teams are still tournament teams and still planning on making the tournament again this year. But those teams weren't necessarily guaranteed second weekend spots in the tournament. Now you sit there and look at it of, okay, well, from a talent standpoint, there's obviously a couple that could be a clear tier above, but maybe right now there's not going to be that tier 1A or tier 1B. It's just everybody is going to be in that tier 2 of how we talked about how 12-8 or 12-6 in SEC play, 10-8 is not going to be the worst slate or the worst schedule when everything is said and done. Now, obviously, I think Auburn has expectations higher than that, but you're going to see teams that are 11-7 or 10-8 that are 8 seeds in March Madness in the NCAA tournament just because of how good this conference is going to be.
And those are teams that you don't want to see,
no.
Right?
Imagine playing Buckyball in the first or the second game of March Madness if they're going to be a 6 or an 8 seed or whatever the case may be. It's not going to be a team that you want to play, or a Georgia-type team.
Yeah, I look at these other conferences, at least early. We're, 2 weeks into the season, give or take, and the top of the Big Ten right now is Purdue, Michigan, Illinois. Those teams are solid, dude. Those are such good teams. You look at the Big 12, Houston, Arizona, BYU, right? Those are teams.
Iowa State in there as well.
Iowa State right there as well. Yeah, I mean, Texas Tech is right there. Talking about the tippity top, right? The Big East has got UConn hanging around. The ACC, you've got Duke and Louisville in there as well. I mean,
NC State.
Yeah, at least top heaviness, the top contenders, those conferences have more to offer than the SEC does.
I feel like that's almost what football is a good example of. Maybe not the ACC, but when you look at the conference, the Big Ten, you have those three teams that are guaranteed, and then you have the two teams that are right there, and then the other 9-10 teams in that conference have absolutely no chance. I don't think that's necessarily the case in basketball, but I think it's comparable halfway to SEC football of there's going to be a couple teams that could emerge, but like we talked about in hour number one of the playoff, of how there's still six teams in the SEC fighting for three, maybe four spots in the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, you look at what's coming up over the next several days. Again, the Champions Classic coming up tonight from Madison Square Garden, downtown New York. You've got 17th-ranked Michigan State taking on 12th-ranked Kentucky, and the 24th-ranked Kansas taking on 5th-ranked Duke.
I know you also wanted to shout out Gonzaga for their win over Southern Utah last night, 122-50. It's basically a conference game.
Oh my God.
For Gonzaga.
Oh my God. Give me a second. Let me pull up the old Gonzaga schedule.
They did beat Oklahoma and they did beat Creighton. So we'll give them credit where it's due. And they play Alabama here in just a couple of days.
Let me just take a little gander here. First of all, that's an Oklahoma team that is, what, probably not going to make the NCAA tournament out of the SEC. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Creighton, yes, they were ranked, and I will give them that. We'll see what Creighton becomes in the Big East this year. That Gonzaga team plays Alabama. Then they play Maryland, which is a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team. Does that say they go to Rupp Arena? No, that's at the Music City Madness. Oh, okay. It says Music City Madness, but it's in Lexington. Weird. Okay, so they go to Lexington, where that'll be a test. Talk to me after they play Alabama and Kentucky. Talk to me after they play top 20 UCLA. Talk to me after they play Oregon.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Because then it's Pepperdine, San Diego, Seattle University, Loyola Marymount, Santa Clara, Washington State, Seattle, Pepperdine, San Francisco, St. Mary's, Portland, Oregon State, Washington State, Santa Clara, that's San Francisco, so Pacific, Portland, and St. Mary's.
That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing.
That looks like a bad non-conference schedule.
Yeah. I mean, that looks like a P5 team's non-con slate.
Which is why Gonzaga scheduled all of these teams up front.
As they should.
As they should. As they have to now get some of that respect as you work your way into the season. Because, again, you're going to play three SEC teams. Oklahoma, Alabama, and Kentucky. And you get, again, one team that's borderline bubble team in the tournament and then two guaranteed front runners to be two, three, if not one seeds in the tournament. So and you're going to be tested, but yeah, it's criminal that you get to turn them on January 17th at 9 p.m. on ESPN+, and you have to watch them at Seattle University and beat them 160-4.
And I'll give them slight credit, slight, as in like a hair off your head, okay, type of credit here. They are at least moving up to the Pac-12 in 2026. Don't forget that. Right on July 1 of 2026, Gonzaga's moving to the brand new Pac-12, which will consist of Boise State, Colorado State, it's the state conference, Fresno State, Gonzaga, Oregon State, San Diego State, Texas State, Utah State, and Washington State.
Yeah, it's the states and Gonzaga.
It's the states and Gonzaga. Which is better than playing, what did you say?
You want me to go through it again? Here we go.
It's better than playing
Pepperdine, San Diego, Seattle Loyola Marymount, University. Santa Clara, Washington, Seattle,
Shut
Pepperdine.
Shut up. The fact they play these teams twice. You go, don't worry, that tough road trip to Portland, that's such a joke. So, at least they are trying, I guess, to move up. Are we going to consider the Pac-12? Are we going back to P6 now? The Power 6 in college basketball when the Pac-12 returns? Because right now you've got the P4. I've always considered the Big East in that conversation, so right now I consider it the P5. When the Pac-12 was Oregon and UCLA and all those teams, like it should have been, like it was for us growing up, it was the P6. It was the P5 in football and the P6 in college basketball. Are we considering the Pac-12 as a power conference in college basketball in the year 2026?
Much less what is college football going to look like with the auto bids.
Yeah, which it'll look a little bit different for football, right? Just because of some of these teams. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I
whatever, dude. Whatever. Gonzaga will never win a national title because they play teams like Santa Clara. So that's their fault. But either way, some really good games coming up over the next several days. Again, those two coming up tonight. Auburn plays tomorrow against Jackson State. Late tip inside of Neville Arena. So be ready for that. If you are planning on attending, that's an 8 o'clock tip on a Wednesday night against Jackson State. So enjoy that one against a winless Jackson State team, by the way. Do you see the other games going on tomorrow? I told you Alabama-Illinois. Alabama goes up to Chicago. They'll play at the United Center to take on Illinois. That's tomorrow night, 11th-ranked Alabama and 8th-ranked Illinois. Did you know we have a top-four matchup at college basketball tomorrow night? We have 4th-ranked Arizona heading to Connecticut, to UConn, to take on the Huskies. That's incredible.
It's going to be really good.
That's incredible. That's the best the Big 12 has to offer and the best that the Big East has to offer, and they're playing in the 5th game of the season. That is college basketball. That's what makes it awesome.
Yeah, 6 o'clock on FS1, and then you get to roll it right over into Alabama and Illinois right after it.
Someone says Santa Clara is not even the best Santa.
So I've heard.
It got a chuckle out of me. That's from one of our loyal listeners in the text box. That got a chuckle out of me on this Tuesday.
And then, again, looking real fast before we got to take our first break, looking at just what the players' era is going to look like. Again, the two regular days on the 24th and the 25th. You then have the Premier Four of the third place game and the championship game on the 26th.
This is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Correct.
Of next week.
And then there's consolation games that are Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, and it's all weird. A reminder, this is not a bracket.
No.
But it's also not a traditional round robin either.
No, you basically, everybody plays these two teams, or your two games, based off of winning, obviously, points scored, points allowed, points differential. All of those go into who are going to be the, what they listed as the Premier Four. And those top two obviously play in the championship game. But, I mean, you just look at what Monday looks like. It starts at 1 p.m. Eastern. It starts at noon. It's Rutgers, Tennessee, Creighton, Baylor, Kansas, Notre Dame, St. John's, and Iowa State, which is going to be incredible. Houston and Syracuse. Auburn plays Oregon at 7 p.m. Gonzaga, that's when Gonzaga plays Alabama. Michigan, San Diego State, and UNLV and Maryland. That is the 11 p.m. Central game, if you want to stay up and watch that on Monday. For any Alabama fans listening, I apologize for what Tuesday looks like, because starting at noon, Rutgers, Notre Dame, Iowa State, Creighton at 1, Kansas, Syracuse at 2:30, St. John's and Baylor, Houston, Tennessee, first one to 30 wins that game. That is the 5 p.m. game. Michigan and Auburn, that is the 7:30 game. Gonzaga, Maryland, Oregon, San Diego State at 10 p.m. Central Time. Oh, and then UNLV and Alabama play their 11 p.m. Central Time game on Tuesday, November 25th.
Little home game for UNLV playing out in Las Vegas. That sucks. Man, that's brutal. I feel so sorry for them. I feel so bad that Alabama has to do that. Hopefully they'll be okay. But it is what it is. So that's coming up next week. That'll be a lot of fun. We'll talk more about that as we go. But we need to get to break, come back. We'll have a quick segment in terms of health updates for Auburn basketball, particularly for Keyshawn Hall. Stephen Pearl met with the media today. We'll talk about that, plus let Christian plug his Lee Scott basketball broadcast. And then we have an interview with the Auburn University volleyball coach, Brent Crouch. All that coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we are back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, and some big updates for Auburn men's basketball while we have a couple of minutes before Christian tells you about his Lee Scott basketball broadcast. He's about to hit the road, head up to the lovely Childersburg. We got some updates from Stephen Pearl today, head coach of Auburn men's basketball, and the burning question was, how is Keyshawn Hall? What is the status? What's the health of Keyshawn Hall? And we saw him go down late in the Houston game. And he seemed to be grabbing, like, the bottom of his foot, right? And we were, basically everybody was trying to figure out of, like, man, what could that be? Like, he clearly couldn't put weight on it. He didn't play the rest of the game, and Auburn missed him the last four-plus minutes against the Cougars. But it was like, man, does it look like an Achilles? Does it look like a strain? You don't really know what it was. It didn't look like a twisted ankle or whatever, but head coach Stephen Pearl spoke with the media today and said that Keyshawn Hall suffered a lateral ankle and foot sprain. A lateral ankle and foot sprain. Says the x-rays came back negative, which is good, but also said that there's no timetable for his return. So basically, he's out indefinitely. Steven backed that up. He says, I don't want to play him tomorrow against Jackson State. Says, I want him to get back to 100% because it's a long season. And I guess at this point, Christian, you hope that he's somewhat healthy enough to play in Las Vegas when you go up against Oregon and Michigan, possibly play somebody else, right? But at the end of the day, they're going to wait until he's fully ready to go, because pushing him to get back sooner and re-injuring whatever that is not worth it in November.
No, I mean, that was almost the Jani Broome type stuff of, when he's ready, he's going to let us know and we'll go from there. But there is no need, especially when it was early in SEC play, of, we're not going to force any sort of injuries out of anybody. There's no need to play Keyshawn if he's 75% healthy,
yeah,
when we still have all of the gauntlet in front of us.
Exactly. So he had some other updates and things that we could talk about to end today's show and into the rest of the week as well. But Christian, you got to hit the road. You're heading up to Childersburg. You've got your opening broadcast of the basketball season for the Lee Scott Warriors. Tell the people what they need to know.
Yeah, should be a fun one. The second game for both the girls and the boys, both teams 1-0 after dominating wins over Alabama Christian Academy. But it's Lee Scott and Childersburg tonight. The girls are slated for a 5:30 tip. The boys slated for a 7 o'clock tip. Both of these teams, again, 1-0. Childersburg 1-0 as well. Should be a very, very fun matchup. A lot of these guys are working their way back from football, as we know, but really excited to see this team. Really excited to see Clark Ivan, Hayden Harper go back to doing what they do best. Should be a lot of fun. Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, and that Radio Alabama app if you want to follow along.
Yep, so that's coming up tonight at 5:30 over on Tiger Country 104.5. Christian is out of here, but when we come back, earlier today, I had a chance to sit down with Auburn University's head volleyball coach Britt Crouch as the Tigers head to Savannah to get ready for the SEC tournament, something they haven't had in over 20 years in the Southeastern Conference. We talk about that and how the Tigers can punch a ticket to the NCAA tournament this week as well. Head coach Britt Crouch of Auburn University Volleyball joins us coming up next.
Halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader, and excited to have a guest in the studio today, one that we've had on several times here on ESPN. Been a little bit, but happy to have him back with us on the airwaves. It's the head coach of Auburn University Volleyball, head coach Brent Crouch. Coach War Eagle, it's good to see you, man.
War Eagle, great to be back.
Well, I know it's been a long season, a busy season, and I'm sure you feel the same way we do. It's hard to believe that the regular season is done and the postseason play is already here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the seasons are interesting. The only experience I have that's comparable, you know, in terms of timing is having young kids, all right, where every day is the longest day, but yes, it also goes by really, really fast at the same time. And it does feel like the season has been going on forever, but it also feels like we just started. It's been a great run, and we're excited to get to postseason.
Well, Auburn volleyball 16-10 overall on the season, 7-8 in SEC play. And is it fair to say that this has been a season of runs and ups and downs? I mean, you've got 3-4 game winning streaks, 3-4 game losing streaks. You've got big wins. You've got some tough losses. I mean, it just feels like it's been one of those up and down type of years for you guys.
You know, I think it's been up and down more in terms of how you have to respond to the schedule, So, you know, we have a different format this year since Texas and Oklahoma joined. That changed things up a little bit. And then Vanderbilt added a volleyball program this year, too. So this is the first year we've had 16 teams.
Sure.
We all decided as coaches in the league that the best way to do this would be we'll play everybody once, and then we'll do this postseason tournament. This is the first year we've done either one of those. We haven't done a postseason SEC tournament, and we haven't played everybody just once. You know, in the past, it was home and away, played everybody.
Yeah.
When you play everybody once, you're really – the ups and downs to some degree, you know, have to do with how you perform. But I think in with respect to this year, I think it has a lot to do with scheduling. You know, we had 8 games on the road, 7 at home. We had some of the wins came when we had some of the lower ranked teams all together in the scheduling. And, you know, some of the streaks where we lost a couple, we had some of the best teams in the league. And then the home and away matters. So I think our play has been fairly consistent, but the opponents and the schedule has changed quite a bit. We're obviously, we always want to win as many as we can. You know, coming out kind of in the middle of the SEC, given the schedule we had with more on the road and than we had at home, I'm pretty pleased. And we're set up with a bye in the first round, and I think we're playing really good volleyball right now.
Well, we talk about it in just about every sport on the air, and every coach that we get in here in the studio. The SEC is just a gauntlet. I mean, there's just ranked teams. It seems like every other game that you guys compete in, it's against a top 25 team, coach.
Absolutely. This is the best volleyball conference in the country. There are no easy opponents. You know, teams near the bottom like Vanderbilt has not won a lot of games, but they just picked off some of the top teams recently. Another example, Alabama has been a little bit lower. They just beat Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you know, we almost took Texas. You know, we went to 5 with them, had some injuries, and kind of ran out of gas at the end with some people off the court.
Pulled the reverse sweep. Right?
Yeah, almost pulled the we played just spectacularly against them.
Yeah.
That's the level we can play. But it's like that every match. It really is. It's the best volleyball you can play. I really think that there should be 11 teams, you know, in the NCAA tournament. I don't think we'll quite get that many because I don't think the committee sees it quite that way. But when you're inside the league, it's just like football and basketball. It's just this is the best volleyball.
We're talking with Auburn volleyball head coach Brent Crouch here on ESPN 106.7. Auburn earns the 8th seed in the SEC tournament. Are the girls excited for a tournament like this? I mean, this has to be kind of like a flashback to high school and travel ball and stuff like that, playing in these big-time tournaments, win or go home and stuff like that. Are they excited for this opportunity this weekend?
They absolutely are. We had a couple days off Saturday and Sunday, got together yesterday just for a really light practice because we don't play till Saturday, so you know we're pacing ourselves this week. But the big purpose of that practice yesterday, besides just moving around a little bit, was just sort of reset the mind, reset the body, reset the heart. And they showed up very excited.
Okay.
We had several players, Lauren Dreeves, Liz, both spoke up at the whiteboard at the beginning, asked to speak and give speeches about where we are and where we want to go and what the goals are. And
that has to make you feel good.
Absolutely. You know, this team, more than any other I've coached here at Auburn, is driving. They're driving themselves. They are,
that's awesome.
They're leading the way. And the best teams do that. And coaches are just more in a support role, you know, more in a tactics role, more in a strategy role, but not in a motivating energy role.
Sure.
And Liz and Lauren were providing that, and the rest of the team is doing the same. And so it was very exciting to see, you know, how they came out of practice yesterday.
Well, I know you guys have been fighting some injuries here down the stretch as well. Are you able to give any sort of updates on what you expect your team to look like, whether it's this weekend coming up in the SEC tournament or later on in the NCAA tournament, what kind of health you're going to be looking at for the next upcoming games?
Yeah, we're not going to be at 100%, unfortunately. Alexis DaCosta went down with a concussion about a week ago. She missed the Texas match and the LSU match. Zoe Slaughter has been out. She is done for the year with a similar injury. And so we went a little bit deeper in the depth chart in that libero spot. But I thought the players that stepped into that role did really an admirable job given what they were tasked with those last few games. Really, really proud of them. Sydney Hondel did a great job, and Bella Humphrey and Bailey did a really good job too, especially coming in later versus Texas. But Alexis is our starter, you know, and she's fantastic. We will likely get her back.
Okay.
We will see later this week. She won't have had a lot of practice time, but but fingers crossed he's cleared to play Saturday. I think that'll help quite a bit. Greer on the right, Trambliss, came in about halfway through conference as a freshman and really stepped up and did just a fantastic job. She went down in the second set versus Texas with an ankle injury. She is not going to be available this weekend. Eden Bauer has stepped in and done a nice job. She was starting earlier this year, so it's and has a lot of experience transfer from BYU. So it's not as if we've got somebody in there who's never done it before. So I think she's going to step up and do a good job. But we're not fully at 100%, and that puts a little bit of pressure on our outside hitters, especially Lauren Dreeves and Liz. They typically get more balls over there than when Greer is in. We tend to get Greer kind of a lot of balls, but you know, that's just the way it is, right? Everybody's dealing with injuries. Everybody's dealing with pressure. Everybody's dealing with fatigue at this time of year. And I've been really proud about how the team has stepped up. Didn't get those wins versus Texas and LSU, but the level of play was really, really high. And I think there's a lot of confidence heading into this weekend.
Auburn volleyball, again, the 8 seed coming up in the SEC volleyball tournament. That's taking place in Savannah starting on Friday. Auburn volleyball earns the first bye. The top 4 teams in the SEC received the double bye. The next 4 teams received the single bye. So Auburn now awaits the winner of Oklahoma and Arkansas. Coach, what can you tell us about those two teams in particular? Maybe if you feel better about one team versus the other, you got to play whichever one, obviously, but just in terms of scouting for Oklahoma and Arkansas, as you guys will take them on 12 p.m. on Saturday afternoon.
The stronger team is Oklahoma. We expect them to win. We've played both. Obviously we played Arkansas at home, beat them in 4. We beat Oklahoma on the road at Oklahoma. You know, both teams are dangerous. They really are. You know, we'll talk about Oklahoma because I think that's who it'll be. Mm-hmm. They've got some just amazing athletes. They've got a lot of height. They can jump. They've got really big arms. They have been inconsistent with receiving serve and digging. And they have served some balls out of bounds too. So they've typically been a little bit error prone.
Sure.
When you put pressure on them like we did at Oklahoma, I think we had 11 aces versus them, that's quite high.
That's strong.
I mean, that's
very strong.
I mean,
yeah.
In a 4-set match, you're usually getting maybe 4, mm-hmm. 4 to 5. So we doubled that amount.
That's crazy.
And they really struggled to receive our serves the whole match. That led to some errors, and we were able to get out of there with a win. But they are quite dangerous. You can't rely on aces, you know, to win a game. If they're able to settle down and receive some serves, then it could go the other way.
I feel like an ace is almost like it feels like you're stealing a point. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
They're so rare, especially at this high level. I mean, if you're talking middle school, high school, that's one thing. But in the SEC, I feel like an ace is like, all right, you got it. You stole a point here. Let's take advantage of it.
Yes. And if you can get multiple of them, it can be really devastating. And it was in that match, but it's certainly not something you're going to rely on. You know, we've got to be able to slow them down at the net. We've got to be able to run our offense. We were able to do that enough, but for sure the aces were, I think, the big difference in that match. So it will be a battle. We are very even in all of the computer rankings of where we are in terms of RPI, KPI. We're like a couple spots ahead of them.
Okay.
So it's, you know, we're 8, they're 9, you know. I mean,
it's as close as it's going to get. Yeah.
It's great we're playing them on a neutral court. We're 4-0 in neutral courts. And they will have played the day before. So we're going to have a bit of an advantage there, and we'll see what we can do. But you know, we are, you know, pivoting a little bit from the SEC tournament to the NCAA tournament. The selection show there is a couple weeks from now, right after Thanksgiving on Sunday. We are right on the bubble for an NCAA tournament.
That's what I was going to ask, is what the outlook kind of looks like. Yeah, the selection show November 30th on that Sunday.
That's right. We are right on the bubble there. Certainly we're good enough. There is no question that we should be in the tournament. But I'm looking at the things that the committee looks at, right? Mm-hmm. And they look at some of these computer rankings that we frankly don't think are quite accurate. You know,
okay.
The SEC in general is depressed in the RPI this year. And so we're going to see how that affects things. Generally, they take between 7 and 9 teams in the SEC. We're 8 right now. So we're in that historical range. But we'll see. We really need to beat Oklahoma. And then if we beat Kentucky, who we would play the next day in the SEC tournament on Sunday, you know, they're 4 in the RPI. We would be an automatic shoe-in if we can get those 2 wins. So we're right there. And there's a lot to play for this weekend. If we win a couple, I think we're in. If we win the whole thing, we're in. But certainly that is our goal, is our perennial goal every year. The expectation is make the NCAA tournament and make a run. And to have, you know, that kind of in our hands where it's really up to us.
Yeah. Do you like that? Weekend. Do you like that as a coach? I mean, as the team, do you invite that mentality of like, look, go out, we have control. If we do what we're supposed to do, we're in. Do you like that as a coach?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You always want to be in control as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, we were trying to lock down that bid before the SEC tournament. I don't think it quite happened. I mean, who knows, right, what the committee's actually looking at.
Yeah.
But we want to build that resume with a couple wins here. But to have it in our hands and not have to rely on, you know, the mathematics of other people losing.
Yeah.
Or a committee decision in the end. We are in the driver's seat, and I think we're going to show up and do it.
Well, we talk about that in college basketball all the time, is don't leave it up to the committee. And I mean, heck, we talk about it with college football now too, is don't leave it up to the committee. Volleyball seems to be the exact same way. So I think you're right. I think a win over Oklahoma, just to kind of get back in that win column again, been on a skid here at the end, get back in the win column, build some momentum. I think a win over Oklahoma would put you guys in. It's what it seems like.
I agree. And certainly a win over Kentucky the next day would slam the door shut. You know, we'd be 17 or 18 and 11 at that point with a really high win. And we have zero bad losses. We have none. I mean, when you look at the teams that are really even ahead of us in the RPI and like 20 spots ahead of us, all have worse losses than us. We don't have a bad loss. Our worst loss is to LSU in 5 on the road with an injury. And they're not ranked low. I mean, that's a good program. I think the resume looks good. Beat Oklahoma, get a nice, you know, get after it against Kentucky, which I mean, look, we played well against them at Kentucky. We took a set, and the set we took from them was not close.
Yeah.
That was a tough environment on the road. We couldn't get it done there. But then the way we played against Texas too, we're clearly good enough to pick off one of these teams. It's just a matter of, can we play as well as we can for just a slightly longer period?
Yeah.
That's it.
It starts on Saturday for Auburn Volleyball. They'll take on the winner in the SEC tournament in the second round of either Oklahoma and Arkansas. That's Saturday afternoon. We'll be streaming television-wise on the SEC Network Plus at 12 o'clock. Word on the street is that Weagle 91.1, the student radio station, is going to make the trip as well. So they're going to have the radio broadcast, which is really exciting for those guys. And, Coach, I've told you before, I got a soft spot for your program. That's how I started my play-by-play stuff, was calling Auburn Volleyball. So really cool to see what you have done to continue to build the Auburn Volleyball program, and so we're excited to see you guys in Savannah, and then we're gonna see you in the NCAA tournament. I'm speaking that into existence, Coach, that it's gonna happen. So we're excited for this weekend, excited for the NCAA tournament. Auburn Volleyball head coach Brent Crouch with us on ESPN 106.7. Always appreciate your time. It's always good to see you, my man. War Eagle.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Auburn University Volleyball head coach Brent Crouch for joining me earlier today as his Tigers head out to Savannah this weekend as they get ready for the SEC Volleyball Tournament. And fascinating stuff, talking about how it wasn't a thing for years, and then with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, everybody plays each other once, and now you've got the bracket, you've got a tournament, and all that good stuff. So Auburn Volleyball will take on either Oklahoma or Arkansas Saturday afternoon, looking for a win to pretty much solidify a spot in the NCAA tournament with the selection show coming up in just a couple of weeks. So thanks to Brent Crouch for joining us. Always love talking to him and getting caught up on Auburn Volleyball. It's been a great show. Had that today. We talked about Auburn men's basketball, some of the updates we got from Stephen Pearl earlier today, especially on Keyshawn Hall, right? His injury status to where no timetable on when Keyshawn Hall will return. He's out indefinitely. We'll see how quickly or not quickly they want to bring him back. Seems like they're not in any rush, and I think that's probably the right call there. So talked a little bit about that. plus some of those big games coming up tonight in college basketball. Kentucky and Michigan State play tonight. You also have Kansas and Duke playing tonight. That's up at Madison Square Garden in New York City. So really looking forward to those. We talked a little bit about that. Also, Auburn's quarterback situation, as there seems to be more and more debate on who will play this weekend, who will start this weekend against Mercer. Should both quarterbacks play with Ashton Daniels not being in? And then some college football playoff discussions as well with new rankings coming out tonight. So a jam-packed show on this Tuesday. If you missed any of it, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We'll have that for you on our station website right after this at ESPNAU.com. And coming up on tomorrow's show, it is stacked on a Wednesday. We'll have our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, our boots on the ground in Athens. He'll tell us what's going on with Georgia football coming off the big one over Texas. Also, what's going on with their playoff ranking, wherever they end up tonight, and what they need to do down the stretch, especially with Georgia Tech coming up next week. So we'll talk to Jordan Hill about that, plus the basketball team for Georgia as well. Also, the return of a guest on Wednesday who's been with us on Wednesdays for quite some time. We took a little bit of a break, but a guy is returning to the show tomorrow, so excited for that. You'll have to tune in to listen to that at 3 o'clock. And then we're going to have a special guest in studio at 3:30 tomorrow. Auburn High's athletic director, James Slayton, is going to be joining us in studio to talk about all the fall sports wrapping up, winter sports getting going, and, of course, the big main event on Friday night at Duck-Sanford Stadium. Auburn High and Opelika High on the football field in the 7A state semifinals. So he's going to join us in studio tomorrow to talk about that. So three wonderful guests in and a part of the show tomorrow afternoon here during On the Line. And then on Thursday, we'll have three more guests. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, head coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School football, and we'll have Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. And then Free For All Friday is what we normally do. Lee Sterling, we'll make picks, we'll talk Auburn Mercer. So we've got a jam-packed schedule the rest of the week here during our show on ESPN 106.7. And by the way, Christian Griffin out of the studio, on the road heading up to Childersburg, where he is going to be on the air for Lee Scott Academy basketball tonight. That'll be on Tiger Country 104.5. The first broadcast of the year. Girls slated to start right around 5:30. Boys will start about 7 there on the Lee Scott Sports Network on Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, and that Radio Alabama app. And speaking of Lee Scott Academy basketball, and then with me for Auburn High basketball, I have a broadcast on Thursday night for Auburn High, who is hosting Lee Scott on the hardwood. And so we are going to do a really, really cool broadcast together. Christian and I are kind of a conjunction or a combination, if you will, of the Auburn High Sports Network and the Lee Scott Sports Network. We'll tell you more about that tomorrow when Christian's here, but that's going to be a lot of fun on Thursday night when Auburn High and Lee Scott, girls and boys, take each other on the hardwood before, again, the big football game on Friday night between Auburn and Opelika. So if you missed any of today's show, again, check it out wherever you get your podcast, or the easiest place to find it is on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Safe travels to Christian. Tune in to him tonight over on Tiger Country 104.5. The Drive is coming up next here on ESPN. We are back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, my partner's Christian Griffin, no longer here. I'm Jacob Goins. Until then, stay safe. We'll talk to you later.